Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Remember the Talking Head song, Stay Up Late? A little baby, there he is, fast asleep. From 1985. He's just a little plaything. Why not wake him up? Well, my next guest says that song marked the start of a malevolent cultural force that he calls contemporary quirk. Other examples of contemporary quirk are the movies of Wes Anderson, the TV show Flight of the Conchords, and public radio's very own This American Life. Michael Hirshhorn wrote about contemporary quirk in an article called Quirked Around for this month's edition of The Atlantic Monthly. He is a contributing editor at that magazine, and is his free time executive vice president of original programming and production at VH1. Michael Hirshhorn, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much. An excellent song to start with.
Thanks. And are you, listeners, a fan of quirky culture, or does it set your teeth on edge? Worse, is it a hollow, meaningless genre posing as something important? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, to talk about quirk in American contemporary culture, 212-433-9692, or post a comment, quirky or otherwise, on our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Michael, take us further in. What do you mean, actually, by contemporary quirk?
Well, I think I've spent much of my life sort of being adjacent to or part of what you could loosely call indie culture, which is kind of, you know, indie rock, alternative movies, the art world, photography, kind of television that isn't on network television and is kind of trying to be conspicuously different. And I've noticed that a lot of, you know, sort of self-styled, unorthodox culture has kind of congealed into its own orthodoxy.
So some more examples that listeners may be familiar with from your article: the sitcom Arrested Development, the Wes Anderson movie, The Royal Tenenbaums, which you use as a negative example of quirk, though you liked Rushmore.
Yeah.
And part of what I get from your article is really that you have, like, good quirk and bad quirk that you're identifying.
Yeah, I think, you know, in general, a lot of the stuff that I write about, I actually personally like, but I start getting kind of exhausted by it. I mean, the movie Little Miss Sunshine, the movie Napoleon Dynamite.
Just too self-consciously quirky?
Yeah, I think that there's a kind of attitude about the world that is kind of trying very hard to be kind of genial. Nothing really matters. All the characters are sort of odd in an interesting way, supposedly, that ultimately isn't really that interesting. I guess, as I was sort of, I got a fair amount of feedback on the article, and the thing that... And the thing that kind of came to me afterwards was, I guess I wished that people who are out of the mainstream sort of were willing to put themselves out more, put themselves about more. This is sort of a moment in the country and in the culture that is very similar probably to the early 70s. And the early 70s really created amazing, angry, passionate art. And the people who can or should be creating that art are creating kind of cutesy little curios filled with kind of odd little characters who do odd little cute things. And ultimately, it's like a handful of sand. It sort of blows away in the end.
And some of this gets into our own kitchen, because part of your article is focused on the public radio show and now TV program This American Life and its host, Ira Glass, who you call the avatar of contemporary quirk. Let's listen to a little bit of Ira Glass on a recent episode of This American Life, the radio version.
Dear This American Life, I'm suffering from a gut-wrenching breakup with my former boyfriend, and I searched your site for shows about breakups and general heartbreak to commiserate. But to my surprise, I didn't find many stories specifically regarding the act of breaking up. I hope you consider it. A show like that would really cheer me up. And so, with that in mind, we devote our show today to breakups.
So why do you call Ira Glass the avatar of contemporary quirk?
Well, I think he sort of has been doing it for a longer time, and I think, to be fair to him, has been doing it better for a longer time than a lot of people. I think that, you know, listening to it over the years, and then it really came together for me watching the TV show, that the stories and the narratives all kind of are placed in a mold, and that they're everybody on the show is kind of genial and well-meaning and kind of not too hot, not too cold, and they have sort of a small little kind of breakthrough that makes them become a kind of better person, and that people who are at odds, that those differences tend to be resolved. But I just think we're living in a moment, and this is maybe unfair to him. I don't want to place everything on him. That's why I sort of expanded the argument mm-hmm. beyond him to this whole kind of generation of people in their 30s and 40s who are making a very similar kind of, creating a very similar kind of culture. That this is a time of really extreme opposites and unreason. And these shows are all filled with...
You're talking about the world situation.
The world situation. And I think that... And we're also in a moment where, you know, under the Bush administration, where language and kind of common sense itself is under siege. And I think one of the things that culture can do is sort of force you to see things in a different way and sort of and kind of force a kind of truth-telling on the culture. And then so that's what I saw as lacking overall.
Yeah, but can I... You mentioned that this is typical of audiences in their 30s and 40s. May I ask how old you are?
43.
So you're in this mainstream.
Yes,
because I wonder if there's not a kind of generational thing going on here. I mean, you're young enough that you may not actually fall into this paradigm, but you know, if you look at older literature and film and things from the baby boomers and before, in the modern era, you might say they were looking for great meaning. They were trying to ask big questions about big ideas, and in Generation X and Generation Y, people are much more skeptical of that whole endeavor. And so smaller questions actually come out more authentic, because the search for big ideas, you know, either led to big monstrous kinds of things in the world, or just seemed too affected. And so, you know, you get postmodern literature, all those novels, you get postmodern movies, you get smaller ideas, but somehow for a lot of consumers of it, with more authentic meaning.
Well, I think that's absolutely a really strong analysis, and I agree with it overall. I think that what has happened, however, is that has now become kind of a crutch, and that, you know, I think deployed correctly, these small moments really can be filled with meaning. I think Jonathan Foer's novel, Everything Illuminated, is a very good example of that.
That's good. Good quirk.
Good quirk, because it kind of let us in with this kind of wacky, just to the edge of cloying narrative. It never went over the line, and then it hits us with this intensely powerful moment about mm-hmm. about confronting the legacy of the Holocaust. But I think in general, and if you look at like A Flight of the Conchords on HBO, you realize that people can use quirk as a kind of lazy crutch, that you just throw out these small moments. They don't really need to connect in any particular way. And it's a way of sort of saying, hey, I'm cool. I get it. I'm really skeptical of kind of big, earnest, baby boomerish ideas. But, you know, it's not really offering anything, you know, any kind of real counterpoint. And what you usually hear, and you hear this a lot kind of in analysis of a lot of contemporary art, is, you know, that this piece is raising questions about authenticity in the culture. And I'm always thinking, yeah, it's raising questions. They're just not very interesting questions.
So here is actor Eugene Hutz in the movie version of Everything is Illuminated.
I'm a vegetarian.
You're a what?
I don't eat meat.
Pork?
No.
Chickens?
No.
And what about the sausage?
No meat.
What is wrong with you?
So was it Eugene, or was it Jonathan Safran Foer in the book in the first place that you referred to as an example of good quirk?
Well, I think it's the overall narrative device. I mean, I think that you're sort of reading this book and you're thinking, oh my God, there's so much shtick here, and then suddenly he pays it off in some kind of real way.
Yeah.
And I think that was also true in Rushmore as well. I do. You know,
the Wes Anderson film.
The Wes Anderson movie. I think despite my criticism, I think he's a brilliant, brilliant director and just operating on a level far beyond most people, you know, working in the movies right now. But you just sort of see that self-indulgence creeping in to the point where you know, one more wacky character trait and I'm just going to run screaming from the theater.
My guest on WNYC, Michael Hirshhorn. Maybe you read his article in the September issue of The Atlantic Monthly called Quirked Around. And we have a lot of people calling in. So obviously, you know, this is striking a cultural chord. So let's get some reaction to you. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or post a comment at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And George in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Hi, how are you? I'm a huge fan of WNYC. I'm a huge fan of Ira Glass's show in particular, and I just feel like it speaks to me on a certain wavelength that I've never kind of ever thing else before when I was growing up did, and I'm having trouble understanding what you're guessing. I mean, for me, I love things that are, like, cool and going to, like, coffee shops and, like, you know, hanging out with people who, I don't know, just ideas that are a little different and kind of cool, and basically when I was growing up, I was kind of considered, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of a dork. And now it's like being a dork, it's like cool. And you don't really have to like really have, it's not like you have to, I mean, I like these movies that have really nothing happening because it's kind of cool. You know what I mean? I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
I think George is playing a role there, don't you?
I'll give him that, and very well.
We'll bring him back on April Fool's Day. In a way, we've had this conversation before. America has had this conversation before. I feel like shortly before September 11th, 2001, we were having this conversation, only instead of quirk, we were using the word irony.
Yes.
But it's like the same thing.
Yes. And I think that, yeah, definitely going back to kind of that kind of Letterman-Seinfeld period in the 90s, it's just one of those things that, if done well, is wonderful, but most people don't do it well.
Joshua in Greenwich, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joshua.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I didn't read your article, but I wish I had, because I'd be more prepared to respond right now. But I feel like a lot of what you're calling quirk culture, first of all, I'm 24, and I feel like my age group, at least my core group of friends and acquaintances, all identify with what you're calling queer culture and what you would say was more 30s and 40s. Most of my friends, all in their 20s, that's like what we relate to, you know, in a world of like American Idol and Paris Hilton and other things like that. We really cling on to things like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Wes Anderson movies. And I think part of it is because of the optimism that those movies lack. Like, we grew up seeing optimism drain out of the United States, and right now it's kind of hard to be happy and cheery and think that there's meaning in what's going on in the administration and, you know, in our foreign policy. And also, just, you know, people call our generation the choose your own religion generation, where we, you know, leave parts of religion out just so we can feel spiritual in some other ways. And I feel like that's also identified.
Joshua, do you feel like it's a kind of post September 11th cultural stance?
Certainly that was a great impact on us. It kind of made us feel that our world was falling apart a little bit, and I don't think that there's been anything to kind of shine a beacon of light to the contrary, that there is something to look forward to, that there is meaning in being a United Statesian in 2007, or, you know, in this era.
Michael?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't gainsay anything that you're saying, I've spent most of my career being fascinated with indie or alternative culture. I just wished it was sort of less inward looking and less kind of, you know, used the word spirituality. I think sort of it's its own church, and it doesn't really have access points outside of itself, so that I think it sort of speaks to its community and doesn't do much else. It's also, and I mentioned this in the piece, extremely white. I mean, we're living
in a very
diverse,
with that.
Yeah, I mean, we're living in a really fascinatingly diverse culture, an increasingly diverse culture. So this is kind of, Ivy League people who went to Oberlin. It's kind of maybe the folk culture of that constituency. And again, there's nothing wrong with any piece of it. I just wish it was a little bit more gutsy and muscular.
Joshua, thanks for calling in. This is Jenny in Windsor Terrace. Is this Jenny Livingston, the director of Paris is Burning?
You got it, and a fan of the show.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, well, my pleasure. I love the discussions on this show. You know, not quirk, although it can be quirky. But anyway, I'm calling because my perception as a media maker is that my colleagues and I, and I'm your age, you know, the guest, is that when we go to corporations such as the one you were an executive at with more serious projects or more earnest projects or certainly more edgily political projects, there's no money for them. So, you know, this is a thing. It's not just in the culture. It's in the corporate structure that allows media culture to live and breathe or not.
Well, you're welcome to come here anytime. I'm a huge fan of Paris is Burning.
A personal, you know, comment.
And no. I mean, if we were lucky enough to have a project like that come across here, I'd scoop it up in a second.
Yeah, but I went to 100, you know, places like VH1 or whatever with it, and it didn't get funded. And when I talk to my colleagues about what's happened to, you know, films like Pan's Labyrinth or the films of Almodovar that I don't think are quirky, I think are pretty serious and political, aren't by and large being funded here in the States.
Right. Well, I mean, I think you're probably raising a fair point. I actually think a movie like Pan's Labyrinth is, I wasn't a huge fan of that movie, but I had a lot of respect for it. It was really dark and really powerful, and that's what I'd love to see happen more, you know, coming more from you know, alternative indie culture. I mean, I think,
it's funny that you've written this article because VH1 is really so unquirky.
So unquirky. I mean, you know, we have a relatively quirky comedy on the air right now called I Hate My 30s. So we play both sides of it.
Jenny, thanks for chiming in. Jesse in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. What you got?
I was calling actually to talk just a little bit about This American Life as a quirky, introspective show.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually thinking about several shows that I've heard over the years that I thought were really relevant to events that were happening worldwide. Like, there was a really great episode talking about the number of civilians that were actually killed during the war. That was broadcast several times. That was amazing.
Unbelievable. And the search for the real numbers.
Yeah.
In that storytelling.
Yeah, and they redid that show twice. You know, 2 years later, they went back and found even more people had been killed. So there was that show, and then there's another show that I'm thinking about that they did working with prisoners in a Harlem prison doing a production of Hamlet, which was one of the most touching and best ways of talking about arts in rehabilitation that I've ever heard.
Right. Well, I'm glad you called because I didn't want to do it myself, giving This American Life more meaning cred than you did, Michael. But we have a lot of callers who want to do that.
Absolutely. No, totally fair counterexamples, and I stand corrected on those two.
Thank you.
So where does culture dig itself out of meaningless quirk, or is it just a kind of a disagreement between how you see it and how others see it as to whether quirk is meaningful or not?
Well, I think quirk can be meaningful. I think at the moment it is verging on not being meaningful. I think, you know, to go back to the first joke caller from the beginning,
yeah.
I just to pick it up as if it were a serious call. I think that the need to be cool is the thing that's holding people back. And so I think that quirk and its sort of various affectations provide this kind of easy shorthand way to say, I belong to this group, I belong to this community. And that some of the great art is made by people who are willing to appear uncool.
In any case, for all the people who said irony died on 9/11, not true, huh?
Not true.
Michael Hirschhorn wrote the article in the September Atlantic Monthly, Quirked Around. He is also a, what's your title again at VH1? Oh, Executive Vice President of Original Programming and Production at VH1. Send your manuscripts directly to him, right?
Please.
Thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.